You know, there seem to be so many ways of communicating these days. So many ways of reaching and communicating with people. It seems like there are more ways than ever before. So many apps. Email, text, WhatsApp, Messenger, Insta, Snapchat. Oh, and the telephone. So many different ways of getting a hold and communicating with people. And yet, if I were to offer an observation, I think, that our ability to communicate has actually eroded. Our ability to dialogue, to converse, to disagree well. Our Creator God wants to communicate with us. Our communicating God, our Creator God, communicates with us. But when and how does our Creator do that? What if I were to ask the question in a sort of a colloquial way, it would be, what is the divine app that our Creator uses to communicate? That application, that channel for communicating. What is it that the Lord has selected? This morning, we continue in our sermon series, Interior Redesign. And that's why the set is constructed this way. It's sort of drawing a parallel to renovating a house, but we're talking about redesigning our lives and with a focus on our internal lives and a focus on creating great space for God. Our aim here at Westview is to grow as disciples, to grow as followers of Jesus. And Winston, if you put up that next graphic, maybe there's another one. Yes, thank you. Over time, many people develop knowledge about God. You can develop knowledge about God, but there is also a relationship that we can have with our Creator. And that difference between knowing about and having a relationship with Him requires time and being with, a relationship with God. And that is where spiritual disciplines come in. Practices, different practices of building relationship with our Creator that help us to grow as followers and disciples of Christ. This morning, we are asking the question about how does God communicate with us? What is the channel, specifically, the app, the channel? And so for that, I want us to go back into 1 Kings, into the Old Testament, and we're going to pick up a part of an experience of one of the prophets, a very sort of, if you could say, a famous prophet by the name of Elijah. Now, prophets were people that God spoke to and gave instruction and direction to speak to people. They were kind of like God's ambassadors, and they would speak, and whether it was good or whether it was a chastisement or an exhortation, that's what the prophet's responsibility was, to hear, discern from God, and to speak God's words to people. And so Elijah is one of those prophets, lived and ministered in the 9th century BC at a very tumultuous and perilous time where kings would kill each other and betray each other and seek the throne, and where there was betrayal and violence. There was also a lot of religious conflict, because people were worshiping idols. And the king's wife was actually had a program to go and kill priests and prophets at that time. And one of the governors in the king's employ was Obadiah. Now, this is a different Obadiah than the 6th century prophet Obadiah. This is Obadiah that was a governor with king at the time of the 9th century. And Obadiah, even though he was employed by the king, was hiding prophets in order that they would not be killed at the threat and danger of his own life. And one of the idols that they were commonly worshiping was Baal. And Elijah is summoned by God and directed by God to go and talk to Obadiah and for Obadiah to arrange a meeting with the king and for there to be a showdown between the idol Baal and Yahweh, the creator. And this showdown takes place. Obadiah arranges it. There is a big showdown. They build two altars. They take two bulls and they put one, kill a bull and split it and put it on one altar, and they kill a bull and split it and put it on the other altar. And Elijah says, now we're going to have a bit of a test here to demonstrate the difference between an inanimate object, a human created object, an idol, and the living real creator Yahweh. And we're going to demonstrate this. He says, you can call on your idol, you Baal, and you can call as much as you want, and we're going to give you all day, and you call and see if you can get this thing lit. See if your idol can start a barbecue. And they do, and they get all screamy and yelly and rolling and ha-ha-tsa-bing, and they run and they chant and they do whatever they can do, and of course, nothing. Now it's Elijah's turn. Elijah digs a moat around the altar. And then he says, okay, grab a whole bunch of water and douse the animal, douse the altar full of water. They do it. He says, do it again. Douse the whole thing again with water. The wood is soaked, the animal is soaked, and now it's starting to pour into the moat around the altar. And he goes, do it again. And now it's just, the moat is full, the animal is soaked, the wood is soaked, everything is soaked. Moat and all. And then he calls on the name of the Lord, Yahweh. He calls Yahweh. Because Yahweh had sent him to do this. And fire erupts and blazes and burns up the animal and the wood. It gets so hot that the stone begins to disintegrate and the water in the moat evaporates from all the heat of the fire. Well, the king is furious. And what does the king do when he's furious? He takes off to go tell his wife. She's going to have a solution. Her solution is, we're going to find and we're going to kill Elijah and anyone in his proximity. Elijah hears this, and he storms off, and he runs for his life. And he runs to a place called Mount Horeb, which is also known as Mount Sinai. It's where God made the initial covenant with the Mosaic covenant with the people of God and Moses. And he gets there. It takes him 40 days to get there on foot. But he gets there. And what is his emotional state? And that's where we pick up 1 Kings chapter 19. And so if you have your Bibles with you, I invite you to turn to 1 Kings. It's near the beginning of the Old Testament. 1 and 2 Samuel, 1 Kings 19, verses 9 and 10. At that place, he came to a cave and spent the night there. Then the word of the Lord came to him, saying, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" He answered, "I have been very zealous for the Lord, the God of hosts, for the Israelites have forsaken your covenant, thrown down your altars, and killed your prophets with the sword. I alone am left, and they are seeking my life to take it away." Elijah, his emotional state in an acronym, a three-letter acronym, is FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt. Fear has driven him to Mount Horeb or Mount Sinai. He's afraid that he's going to be killed. He's afraid they're going to get to him. And he's uncertain. Like, does this mean the kingdom, like, is it it? That's it. It's over. We did the thing, and now they're going to kill me. It must be over. I must have failed. The kingdom must be, the whole adventure, the venture to advance the kingdom is done. And he blames, do you notice he also blames, you know, look at the people, they've done this, and they've done this, and he's got a sense of anger about him, and that they would go ahead and do this. And incidentally, Elijah's anger, remember, a prophet is still a human being, and Elijah's anger gets away from him every once in a while. This ability that the Lord has given him, he has misused at times. But he's got all of this emotional storm brewing. And here's the interesting thing about human memory, is that we have something called selective attention. Elijah has it, we have it, you and I have it, selective attention. I mean, think of it. There were many crowds of people that were converting to Christianity or converting to following Yahweh. He had met Obadiah, who was demonstrating this amazing courage to hide prophets and priests that were under threat of being killed. And then there's the obvious, where he had just 40 days ago witnessed the power of Yahweh himself, who had burned up this whole thing. And in spite of all of that, a threat came to him and he ran for his life. Because of the difficulties we have with our own memory, an emotional storm. In our context here, sisters and brothers, what was going on in the 9th century BC sounds eerily familiar to our context from a global perspective, where we have leaders in countries. Some of the countries get to vote, some of them don't. But there's all kinds of political turmoil. There's all kinds of violence. It seems like humans, as G.K. Chesterton said, civility and barbarism seem to run in parallel throughout human history. 9th century BC and today. But even locally, you know, if you are tapped in through your apps or you're tapped in through watching news and so on, I can imagine that we could also, at least at times, experience some emotional storm and turmoil ourselves. Or even just personal with health and family situations. And the challenge of memory is one that is real, as it was for Elijah, is real for us today. And the reason is that we essentially, Daniel Kahneman is an Israeli-American, or was, he died recently, but a social psychologist and neuroscientist, and he described the fact that we live in our remembering selves is how we go about living, based on memories. We live based on the memories we have. And Winston, if you could throw that next slide up there. And what happens is that for memories to be stored and become long-term memories, they need to be processed thoroughly and deeply. So in order for us to have a memory that we can refer to long-term, is you need to process it thoroughly and deeply. And the reality is that when it comes to negative experiences, we process things that are negative thoroughly and deeply. And so all the negative experiences and events and thoughts get registered into our long-term memory. And Roy Baumeister, Dr. Roy Baumeister, who's also a social psychologist, and he's actually a highly referenced scientist, he has this hypothesis that bad is stronger than good for this very reason, because we remember and we process negative things. And then on top of that, the other problematic issue is what we call the selective attention. And so we select what we register, but then we also have what Miroslav Volf, who's a theologian from Croatia, and he talks about the difficulty of remembering or recalling rightly. So when we go to recall and remember, we also need help doing that, because we don't always remember and recall correctly. We can use the hyper example of the fishing story where I caught a fish this big. Well, it's not really true. That's an exaggerated example of our ability, our challenge to even recall rightly. And so we're faced with this reality, and knowing about it, we can do something about it. But that means that even when it comes to our own life experience as a church group or as individuals, it's difficult for us to recall events rightly, or even especially to recall good news, to actually remember and recall and know the real true character of God and the way He actually works in the world, to wrestle with and understand the gospel, to understand good news and to register that thoroughly and process it so that that becomes registered as part of our long-term memory. And so what transpires here to help? What is the communication app that Yahweh is going to use in order to reach Elijah? Verse 11. So God, the Creator, Yahweh, said, "Go out and stand on the mountain before the Lord, for the Lord is about to pass by." I want to pause there, and I want you to notice some good news. Pass by. The Lord is going to come near. The good news is that our Creator, His will and His desire is to draw near to you. His will, His desire, His ability is to draw near to you. Now there was a great wind, so strong that it was splitting mountains and breaking rocks in pieces before the Lord, but the Lord was not in the wind. Wrong app. And after the wind, an earthquake. But the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire. But the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, a sound. Sheer silence. When Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face in his mantle and went out and stood at the entrance of the cave. Then there came a voice to him that said, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" The good news is, friends, that Yahweh draws near. The good news is that Yahweh communicates. Yahweh speaks to people. The good news is that Yahweh draws near. The good news is that Yahweh speaks to people. And the way He has chosen to do it here is through sheer silence. It sounded like a whisper, but it was something that Elijah recognized. Elijah responds, verse 14. Elijah answered, "I have been very zealous for the Lord, the God of hosts, for the Israelites have forsaken your covenant, thrown down your altars, and killed your prophets with the sword. I alone am left, and they are seeking my life to take it away." Elijah replies exactly the same as he responded the first time, word for word. In Hebrew and in multiple Bible translations, you put the two beside each other, and it's an identical response. Because Elijah is spinning. But now, Yahweh has his attention. He's spinning, but now Elijah has come and he's paying attention. Verse 15. Then the Lord Yahweh said to him, "Go, return on your way to the wilderness of Damascus. When you arrive, you shall anoint Hazael as king over Aram. Also, you shall anoint Jehu, son of Nimshi, as king over Israel. And you shall anoint Elisha, son of Shaphat, of Abel-Meholah, as prophet in your place. Whoever escapes from the sword of Hazael, Jehu shall kill. And whoever escapes from the sword of Jehu, Elisha shall kill. Yet I will leave them 7,000 in Israel, all the knees that have not bowed to Baal and every mouth that has not kissed him." The good news is, Elijah, that Yahweh the Creator's mission will continue. It continues unabated. It is not halted, truncated, or stopped. The Creator's mission continues. And what happens in this encounter is as though it was Elijah's, like God's transition plan with Elijah, his succession planning. But you know what the good news is? As Yahweh is communicating this to Elijah, he's saying, "Elijah, my mission will continue. And the good news is it's not up to you. The pressure is off. It doesn't depend on you, Elijah. Elijah, you get to participate and you have joined with me in it, but Elijah, I've got this." Whew. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So the man, Elijah, who had spent 40 days getting here, running for his life, storming off, hears all that, and he goes and does precisely what the Lord has directed him to do. He walks right back in to the danger zone. He actually anoints someone else as king. Someone else as a prophet. I mean, what? The app that the Lord used is silence. It's quiet. He used silence. It's not on your phone. It's exactly, precisely not on your phone. Silence is the channel that opens up for Yahweh, the Lord, to speak personally and directly with us. He's present. He's always present. He is in space and time, as we call it. He's not contained or restrained by it, so he can move in and out of it. He's always present, and he communicates. In fact, when he communicates, communicating with us is one of the ways he demonstrates that he is present with us. The communication is vitally important in any relationship, including our relationship with the Lord. And communication involves both talking and listening. And listening means is only effective when we stop talking. We actually know this to be the case. If you are in a conversation with somebody and they are speaking, and in your mind all you are doing is formulating what you're going to say, or you're readying what you are going to say, you are not actually listening to the person that is right in front of you that is talking. You actually have to stop talking out loud or in your mind in order to hear, to actively hear what they are saying. And that is the case for Yahweh, our Creator, as well. And so the spiritual discipline is silence. The spiritual discipline is silence. And we call it a discipline, or we could call it a practice, because what happens is it starts out as a practice, as a discipline, something intentional. But those things that we do intentionally that require some discipline develop into a habit. And habits can develop into instincts. So over time, you begin to have a habit of having some time where it's quiet and silent. And over time, you develop such an instinct that when things are tumultuous or stormy, your instinct says, what I need is to grab my silence app. Because now it's an instinct. Requires consistency, practicing it regularly. The practice of silence. I'm going to invite the music team to come back onto the platform. I gathered some books from the library, and I meant to turn the light on to the library and open the door. And so I wonder if I could get one of our ushers to do that, turn the light on and open the door to the library. I noticed that last week someone from our congregation mentioned that, because I mentioned the library and the door was closed and the light was off. So, but there's a few books. This one is called Can You Hear Me? Tuning Into the God Who Speaks. It is by Brad Jerzak. Now, I don't agree with everything that Brad has to say. So, but this is a good book for you if you want to explore, because that's what Brad is doing here, is he's exploring how the practice of actually listening, and how do we do that? Originally a pastor in BC. And then I mentioned this one before, Dallas Willard, Hearing God, Developing a Conversational Relationship with God. Excellent. Excellent book. These two are in the library. And then Gordon Smith is the recent president, president emeritus at Ambrose. He wrote this book, The Voice of Jesus, Discernment, Prayer, and the Witness of the Spirit. So just some examples of books that you can dig into. But I think the first thing that we all have to decide, that you have to decide, is do you believe that the Lord speaks to people? That's part of what you have to wrestle with and come to grips with. I'm showing you my cards. I believe He does. I believe that He does, and I believe when He starts, He is going to say your name. He will probably say something around the likes of, do not fear. He's going to say something like, I love you. All of those things are true. And then He's going to say, listen. Because He's going to want to talk with you. So if you believe that, if you are exploring that, if you can imagine that, if you can be invited into that part of God's story with human beings, then I want to say to you, the next thing I want to recommend to you is get the app called Silence. And every once in a while, employ that app. And silence all the voices that are a din of voices trying to get your attention. And that means including your own. But all these voices that are vying for your attention, who incidentally do not have your best interests in mind, certainly nearly not all the time. But our Creator does. In your bulletin, you'll see some other additional helpful hints and directions that I've included in there if you want to explore this a bit further. How to listen, how to discern, share what you're hearing with other people, talk about it, practice it. And so when the storms come, don't storm off. Turn the storm off. And be quiet.
I'm going to invite you to stay sitting. We have a couple of songs here. One that is new to you, to let it just draw your heart and your mind to pray to the Lord through the words. And then the next song, you'll know it, and you can join me for that. Or you can just sit and let the words flow in and through you as you direct it to the Lord from your heart. I'll just be quiet and let you speak through the silence. Here I am, no more hiding. You are in this moment, I won't fight it. I'll be quiet, I'll just be quiet and let you speak through the silence. Here I am, no more hiding. You are in this moment, I won't fight it. I'll be quiet, Lord, I come and I confess, bowing here, I find my rest. Without you,